Ryan, thanks for joining us today, buddy.
Fellas, thanks for having me.
You know, Ryan, it's we've been looking forward to, and in story time, we kind of talk about a guy's or a person's career and kind of their life. So let's go back to when you were, you know, a young player growing up playing football. And I read that you were actually, you know, a really good quarterback, but people thought maybe you were more suited to be a tight end than a quarterback.
Well,
Here, we'll have to try to get a clearer reception there, Con Man, just so we can hear Ryan's answer. Obviously, I caught that it was 1 year when he was in college that they thought about it, but obviously elected to stay a quarterback. And, you know, he was a good quarterback. He was an excellent college quarterback, no question about it. And, you know, to go to the pro straight, you can see it in every sport. There's lots of athletes at the level right below the pros where it's, you know, it's difficult to make that. And Ryan's back with us. And so, Ryan, you mentioned there was the once, you know, 1 year, but ultimately, you know, you were a quarterback and, you know, you were an outstanding quarterback. Can you take us back to the mindset of like, cause the NFL is on another level of any other sport in North America in the amount of coverage it gets, the fandom, like there must have been a lot of excitement, but also a lot of pressure on you building up to, you know, Ryan Leaf, Peyton Manning, who's going one, who's going two. Can you kind of take us back? Was it fun or was it nerve-wracking leading up to that?
It was incredibly fun, right? I mean, this is something that I'd wanted to do since I was just a little boy, and now everybody was telling me how great I was, and they were wooing me, and I was recruited by everybody you can imagine in the country to go to college, and then and then at the next level, you know, I was being told I'm the greatest quarterback in the world, right up next to Peyton Manning. So I thought it was exactly where I was supposed to be. I was going to have the career I had always expected to have, which was to play 15, 20 years in the NFL, win some Super Bowls, ride off into the sunset, do Old Spice commercials, you know, live that life. But, you know, life isn't fair, you know, and it's how you deal with it that matters. And I dealt with a lot of things in a very poor, poor way.
And that's why we wanted to get you on, Ryan. I've always appreciated your honesty. You know, obviously at the time, you know, when you're a young man and you're in it, I can't imagine how hard it is. But years later, you know, after the fact that you've been very forthcoming in your journey and in your challenges, and, you know, it seems like you've found a lot of peace and happiness now, which is wonderful. So can you take us back to after the draft? Now, you know, you're taking number two overall. There's still lots of hype. It's very exciting. What were looking back on it, or even at the time, like, what were the major errors that you felt you made that led to you not becoming the quarterback you wanted to become?
Well, dealing with failure, right? I, for whatever reason, I didn't see myself as having failed at any point in my life up to that moment. You know, I was always successful. I won a championship in high school, won a championship in college. I just felt like there wasn't a lot of failure along the line there, but I didn't really have a great perspective around that. I failed so many times, and I had a lot of people supporting me. And when I started to fail at the highest level, instead of seeing it as an opportunity to do it better the next time, I saw it as a black and white issue. Like, either you're a success or a failure. And instead of allowing support to help, I pretty much pushed that away and surrounded myself with people that telling me that I was right, that I was the victim, that all of those things. And I wasn't prepared mentally to deal with something that, you know, very few people are, but I didn't take advantage of the things that were offered. And so when things became bad, I just exponentially made them worse because of my behavior, how I dealt with situations. That was the ultimate problem.
Ryan, was it a challenge to go into that dressing room with the Chargers that had, you know, some pretty strong veterans on it? And, you know, did that maybe contribute to this black and white issue of failure and success?
No, it should have actually contributed to success, because I had great mentors in that locker room. Junior Seau, Rodney Harrison, those types of guys that if I would have just followed around like lost puppies and saw how you were supposed to get it done instead of thinking I was above it all, that I was better than everybody else, that I was the highest paid player on the team, therefore I was the guy, I think I could have been much more successful. But I wasn't willing to do that, which is incredibly moronic now from somebody who's 45 years old and who has been, and the only reason I'm here now is because I've accepted help from a ton of people who have had my back over the last 10 years.
Ryan Leaf joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260, of course, the second overall pick in the 1998 NFL draft. And you know, you come into the NFL, you mentioned, you know, highest paid player, there's all these expectations on you, Ryan, and you weren't able to comprehend it. When you go back and you look at it, like, was it one thing, or was it just like a snowball effect? You know, you threw an interception at the wrong time, and now all of us, oh my goodness, like, I can't do that, I'm Ryan Leaf. Like, did you have too high of standards for yourself looking back?
Well, I had very high standards. My expectations were higher than anybody's. So, and I assume everybody's is at that point. But you have to have perspective around it. I had a horrible game at Kansas City in week three. I was 2-0 as a starter. No one had done that since John Elway in 1983. Peyton had struggled in his first couple games. I really thought I was winning whatever comparison people were having in that conversation. And then I played the worst football game of my life. And it's not that I played the game poorly. It wasn't about how I played. It was how I reacted to it, how I dealt with it. I got upset with a cameraman in the locker room the night after the game. The next day, I yelled at a reporter who had reported that interaction in the Kansas City locker room. And that was caught on video, and it became a viral video, which really hadn't existed up until that point. It was how I dealt with it. And I dealt with it about as poorly as you can. So I don't remember a positive thing in the NFL after that, even though I would go on and play for 4 or 5 more years. It just was because of my inability to deal with failure in a positive way. I mean, Peyton Manning, his rookie year, would go 3-13. He would throw more interceptions than any rookie ever during that season. Those types of failures in my eyes would have been the end-all, be-all. He saw those as an opportunity to be better and get better and improve. And sure enough, the next year, they flipped it completely around and went 13-3, and I didn't play at all because I was out with a shoulder injury. So those are – it's a I didn't realize it then. Of course, I can see it now of the moment that really transitioned me from – current NFL player to ultimately former NFL player.
You know, Ryan, you talk a lot about the success you had growing up and then how that this game kind of made it difficult for you. Do you think that that's a very easy path, but the very successful path you had to the pros, did you need to maybe have a few more hiccups on the road to understand how to overcome adversity at different times?
Oh, I had so many. I'm from Montana. That's the biggest hurdle to ever get over. There's never been a first round draft. There's never been a first round draft pick from the state of Montana ever.
Really?
Ever. I'm the only one. So there's no reason why I should even have been there. I had to overcome so much getting out of that small town, going to a small university of Washington State who hadn't been to a Rose Bowl since 1931. Sorry, 67 years it had been. So I had overcome so much. It was such a struggle to get there. I just don't know if I saw it as that. I didn't realize the struggle I was having every single day because I had some success. But it was something I can look back on now and be incredibly proud of because no one had ever done it. There was not a trailblazer. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew I needed to get there.
You know, it's interesting, right? Like, I love your perspective after the fact because a lot of people, when to have such heightened expectations of yourself, also to have a very unique ability that very few people have, right? Like, getting drafted is one thing. Being drafted as a quarterback, like, it's the hardest position to play, maybe in all pro sports. It's extremely difficult. That's why there's always seems to be a shortage of starting quarterbacks, in the NFL or even in the CFL. It's just, you know, maybe even in NCAA. It's extremely difficult position to play. So let's go back to your successes. What made you a good quarterback? Because, you know, to get drafted number 2 overall, you're an elite quarterback. What made you a good quarterback?
I had an extremely strong arm. I was incredibly athletic and talented. I knew how to take what my coach was telling me in the way he articulated it and then apply it on the football field. I was very good at taking what I saw on film, transitioning that to what happens on the football field. Those things were, I wouldn't say came easy to me, but I was able to filter and do that really well. I was a tremendous leader. To do what we were able to do, it was 26 seniors on that Washington State roster that year. I was a young kid. When we won a title, when we won a state title in high school, I was the junior with just a room full of seniors. To be the leader of men who are older than you, you have to have a quality in you that is great in leadership. And that's what surprised me so much when I got to the NFL, because all the guys were older than me. It kind of fit what I had always done. I'd taken older guys and we'd made championships out of that. I wasn't ready for the fact that these were actually men. These were men who were putting food on the table for their families. And I was still kind of that, adolescent kid trying to figure it out and wanting to have fun and not understanding the kind of pressure and the importance of what we were doing.
Tom with Ryan Leaf, talking about his life and his career in the NFL. So, Ryan, you go back to that game where you had, I believe you said it was Kansas City, and it kind of went, you talked about the interactions with the two members of the media, but then, did it right away, did you feel different heading into the next game, or was it just slowly kind of just evolved into something that was, not going to be positive for you the rest of that season?
Well, when you're battling the media, your teammates, the fans, everybody from Sunday to Sunday, your central nervous system doesn't allow you to function at the level you need to battle the best defenses in the world on Sunday. And I followed that poor performance up with a four-interception game against the New York Giants. Then we went and got beat by the Oakland Raiders. Our head coach got fired, who I had a very good relationship with, a guy that was pretty confrontational, which I liked in a head coach. It just steamrolled. And then losing my entire second year, which is the year that rookies usually make that jump. Either they get it or they don't. I didn't even get that. I blew my shoulder out during training camp, and I missed the entire second year of my career there. And me not being able to play football, me just being inside my own mind, is a scary, scary place to be. And that's where I was for an entire year. No way to compete, only to create chaos in however I saw fit. And it continued to spiral, and to the point where I would spend only 3 years in San Diego, a place that I, like I said, thought I would play 15, 20 years in and be successful.
Ryan Leaf joins us. And Ryan, it's fascinating, the injury aspect of it. And obviously you had struggled early on, but you mentioned when you have all that downtime and you can convince yourself, like our mind is extremely powerful, positively or negatively. It can work both ways. And sometimes it becomes, your biggest enemy in certain ways. And, it's very difficult to say what if. But if that injury hadn't occurred, and I know you still would have been frustrated, but do you think it would have been different because you maybe would have had the opportunity to still play and not always just sit there and think about things?
Who knows? I mean, that revisionist history is absurd, because what if I turned into a great football player and had a ton of success because of that and won a couple Super Bowls? I would just be this 45-year-old jerk with a couple Super Bowl rings, I had a behavioral issue. I thought I was more important than everybody else because I played this game. I needed to be humbled. And what went on and what happened after my playing career, what went on during my playing career, has made me the man I am. So I do not look back and think, oh, it could have been better, because, you know what? Football ends for everybody a long time before they expect it to. It's a matter of what you do from that point on. And what I'm doing now and what I hope to do with the family that I have and the person I've become is way more important than ever been any good at being a professional football player.
I love that answer, Ryan, and it's so true. We're going to ask you to take a quick break because I want to come and talk about, you know, Ryan Leaf, the human being, and how you've bettered yourself and why that's so important. Because I think sometimes in pro sports, we maybe forget that aspect. More with Ryan Leaf when we return on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Since, and you know, Ryan, you mentioned a lot that you were much more than a football player, and in the grand scheme of life, that's very true, because even if you have a wonderful career, it's still a pretty short period of time, even for the greatest players, except maybe Tom Brady. He seems to be able to play forever. But I kind of want to talk about after, you know, the Ryan Leaf, the human being, you know, after your football career was over, and obviously you went down a pretty dark path for some time. You had some drug problems that you've been able to overcome. You've been sober now, I think it's for 7 or 8 years. What was the lowest when you got arrested, or was there other lows before or after that?
Well, let's start with the short NFL career. I didn't have a short NFL career. I actually had a longer career than most average do. The average length of an NFL career is 2.8 years. There have only been 1,000 players ever to play 8-plus years. There have only been 24,000 players ever in the NFL. In the 100 years of the NFL, there's only been 24,000 players ever. I think that gets lost on people a lot of time. Like, everybody plays in the NFL. There's been so many that played in the NFL. It is the elite of the elite. I would say my rock bottom hasn't been hit. Hasn't been hit yet, because I think rock bottom is when you no longer are able to get back up. You'd think going to prison would have been a rock bottom for me, but it wasn't. It was just another place for me to wallow and complain and you know, make it about me. You'd think it would be arrested twice in 48 hours. You'd think it would be, you know, stealing from people's homes to feed your drug habit. None of that stuff's rock bottom. That's what you do to get through what you need to get through. It just is. So I don't think I've hit my rock bottom, and I hope that I wake up every single day and do the next right thing and never have the opportunity to do that.
Ryan, was there some substance abuse prior to your arrival in the NFL, or is it more afterwards?
Yeah, I wish I could blame my poor play on substance abuse, but you know, I didn't have a drink until I was 18. I haven't done another drug other than Vicodin, which was been given to me by a doctor my whole life. I tried marijuana once when I was in Amsterdam, simply because, you know, when in Rome, I kind of thought I hated it. I looked at people who did drugs and who drank as morally corrupt. Who would have thought that I would become this junkie that was, you know, like any other drug fiend? Mine was just, you know, handed to me by a doctor in prescription form. Thank God I never advanced to, you know, being a heroin addict, because I'm sure I would have died. I'm sure I would have. Again, would have loved to blame my poor play in my NFL career on some sort of addiction, but. It was, I didn't start abusing prescription painkillers until after I had left the NFL.
And in a report, you got one from a boxing promoter. Is that correct? That was kind of what started your eight-year run of off and on opioid abuse?
Well, it was, I was at an event in Vegas, and they were announcing celebrities in the audience, and they announced, you know, Tiger Woods and Dr. Dre and, you know, Michael Jordan, people like that. And the audience, you know, clapped and applauded, and they announced my name, and it was just boos and hisses. And, you know, it's not like that hadn't happened before. When you play professional sport, you walk into an opposing team stadium, that's what happens. But my addict mind, because I was a drug addict long before I ever took a drug in the way I thought and dealt with things, I heard not only was I a terrible football player, but these people were saying I was an awful human being. And I was going to parties that night where there were Super Bowl champions and Hall of Famers, and where I always felt less than and judged. And this acquaintance of mine offered me a couple Vicodin. Now, I'd been introduced to that drug, you know, before my whole life, because I had 15 surgeries in my life, and I was always given this medication after the surgery to deal with the acute physical pain. He gave me a couple pills. I mixed it with the alcohol that night, and it did exactly what it was supposed to do, right? It took away the emotional pain I was in, and now I was in a place where I was using it for emotional pain rather than physical pain, and they're called painkillers for a reason. And I think I was just looking for a way to numb away everything that had existed in my life for so long.
Joined by Ryan Leaf, longtime NFLer. Ryan, it's a great, you're amazing. I appreciate your open honesty here. It's a real eye opener. Now, you know, you're going through that time. You know, was there ever a teammate that reached in and said, "Hey, man, like, can I offer you some help, or help you maybe
no.
in some way?"
No, because no one knew. I didn't let anybody know. I didn't know a drug dealer. I didn't know, I didn't take them from other people at the time. I was going to a doctor. And so none of my teammates or former teammates or anybody that could, I never let them around me. I just pushed them away. I surrounded myself with people that enabled my behavior because I was the golden goose to them. And that's, when you have a lot of money, you can do that. Now, when the money goes away and those hanger-ons can see that the golden goose no longer exists, then you don't have real friends. I've found who my real friends are over the last 10 years. I definitely have, those who unconditionally care about me. But, you know, I didn't have anybody at the time because no one knew. I'm sure that if some people knew that cared about me like the way they did and who have come to my aid the last few years, they would have been right there to help for sure.
Ryan, when were you able to maybe forgive yourself and love yourself? How were you able to make that transition, or have you?
You know, it took a while. It took a lot of hard work. It took it took time with therapists and with loved ones and with the fellowship of AA and you know, the understanding that what other people thought of me was none of my business. So there was a lot of that, and it took a long time. But when it finally clicked, when I finally fully understood that the guy I see in the mirror is wonderful and the same as everybody else, whether you were a five-time Super Bowl winning quarterback or an All-Pro or a Hall of Famer, I'm exactly the same. We're all these flawed human beings trying to be better every day. And the idea that what will make me special is if I would have been a good football player is incredibly asinine. It doesn't mean anything. It means nothing in the scheme of things, because I was lucky enough to be asked to come and support my friend Peyton Manning in his enshrinement a couple weekends ago in Canton. And as we stood there Sunday night after his induction, just talking in the backyard of this wonderful place where he was having his induction party, we were able to kind of look at each other and say, you know, no matter what, we're pretty much in the exact same spot now. We're 45-year-old dads who are former players that are just trying to, you know, be the best possible versions of themselves now. And that's perspective. That's true perspective. And the fact that we came away with an honest-to-God friendship out of all this, I think it's pretty special, and that's what should be championed the most. I'm glad it did.
Ryan, you're now working with, I believe, in some different communities trying to help people kind of get their priorities straight. And you know, obviously, it'd resonate with them quite strongly, but when did you decide that was the road that you wanted to take on top of some of the media stuff you do?
Well, I knew it had to be the foundation of who I was when I got out of prison, because if it was about me anymore, I was just going to end up back there or most likely dead. So it had to be about other people, and that had to be about the foundation of it all. So I figured that out while I was in prison, when I started being of service while I was in there. And then I knew when I got out, it was going to have to be the foundation of who I was. And that's where it started. It started in a sober living house in Santa Monica, California, where I started as a driver, made $15 an hour. I tell you that because I was making $5 million a year and was miserable person. You didn't want to be around me. And I'd just been offered a job for $15 an hour and felt more value than I'd ever had. So that's where it's based in. And the idea that I get to live this amazing life now and chase my dreams and my goals, as long as that stays at the foundation of it all.
I love that answer, Ryan, because a lot of times on the outside, people say, oh, look at these athletes. You know, they got a lot of adoration, you know, and they make millions of dollars more than most of us can really relate to. But I've always been a big advocate. My late father told me, hey, money doesn't guarantee happiness. And sometimes it can make things worse depending on how you deal with it. So now that, you know, and I read your letter to my younger self a few years ago in the Players Tribune, and you've had like a, like this very profound, you seem to have a very calm demeanor about you and how you look at the big picture. You're not embarrassed by your path. You're like, hey, this is who I am. And I got this way because of all the different paths. And some of them were maybe uglier and harsher than I wanted to at the time. But now that you're here and you're a father and you're 45 years of age, you mentioned earlier you're pretty happy that, hey, because every road leads to where you are now, but how does it make you think a better father? Because you've had to deal with adversity, more adversity than a lot of people, and maybe even more than you know. How has that helped you as a father? And then conversely, is there a challenge being a dad, you know, when your kids can read some of the things that you've done because they're on the internet?
It makes me a great father because I have an amazing story of success and failure and ups and downs, and that's what life is. If I had you come on my radio show next week and tell me your life story, there may not be the unique markers of being a professional football player, but there would be adversity. There'd be that of overcoming it, which makes everybody who has a story, and everybody does, an impactful one. And yeah, I'm going to have to talk to my kid, because guess what? Kids are brutal. Kids are mean, and he's going to go to school one day, and kids are going to make fun of him or say something about his dad, and he's going to come home confused, and I'm going to have to be able to tell him clearly and honestly about what that is about. And that's part of being a dad, and it'll be the most important part of what I do, because he's the best thing that ever happened to me. And so that's incredibly important, but I think because of what I went through, it's going to make me an incredible father. Doesn't mean I don't screw up. I mean, you know, like everybody, we screw up all the time, especially as parents.
Ryan, do you love football again in the role that you do, like watching it, or is it different for you?
No, I love it. It is. I am so excited. I'm calling the Hawaii UCLA game this week, and then I'm on the road with ESPN for the rest of the year. I get to do some NFL work with Sky Sports over in London for the last 7 weeks of the season. I mean, last year when I didn't get to do anything, right, because of COVID and everything that and the protocols that went with that, I am incredibly excited for what football has to offer me this year because of the choices I made, because of the decision-making I made in terms of making the next right choice, I get to live this amazing life around football, which gave me everything. No longer toxic. It will never be toxic. I made it toxic is what happened. I was responsible for that, not football.
Because Ryan, you played the position, sorry, go ahead, Struts.
No, I was just saying, you know, Ryan, you talk about your love for the game. Would you ever want to coach quarterbacks? Just specifically, that's.
Well, I did. You know, I did. I did down in Texas, and my quarterbacks were great. They led the nation in passing and in touchdowns. In fact, all three of them would go on and play professionally, and from the Division II level, one even got drafted in the sixth round. But the deal is you're responsible for these kids, and I took advantage of them. I asked them for their pills when they were injured, or I took them from them. And I don't care how reformed or redemptive people may think my story is, I wouldn't trust me with their son. So therefore, I can't be a coach. There are consequences to your actions. And yeah. Just because I can't coach anymore doesn't mean I can't be a part of things and do things to try to be redemptive and helpful, but there are just some things that the consequences are too drastic to allow you to be able to do it again. So that's why I'm not coaching, and I don't think I would ever be offered an opportunity to coach, to be honest with you.
The quarterback position, you know, there's been so many advancements in technology and studying everything else, but we're not seeing, you know, a big increase. There's always been a shortage of star quarterbacks, Ryan. Is the position just that difficult that we're never going to get it? Are there some things missing in how quarterbacks are coached, you know, at the college level to allow more NFL quarterbacks to succeed? Is there something missing there?
Oh, I think college quarterbacks have had tremendous success playing professional football. I mean, look at the stars that we have in the NFL right now, the up-and-coming guys. It is the single most difficult professional position to play by far the hardest position. There's only 32 of them in the world. Probably only 10 or 12 of them are great every year. That makes it an elite deal, and that's why just – you know, Joe Blow can't come off the streets and play it and be successful. Those that do it are elite thinkers, elite athletes, elite compartmentalists. It's amazing to watch because I couldn't do it, right? And I was as talented as anybody. I was the greatest college football player in the country probably in 1997, and I still couldn't do it. It takes so many different things to be a good, great professional quarterback. And that's why it makes it so much fun to watch the likes of Tom Brady and Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers do what they do. Patrick Mahomes, it's unbelievable.
So lastly, Ryan, as you watch all the young quarterbacks, is there one, like, do you have a favorite of the, I'm not talking Brady and those guys because obviously Brady's, you know, the GOAT, but, you know, Patrick Mahomes is unbelievable. I'm just talking like, last year or the rookies coming in, are there young quarterbacks you're like, man, I like that guy and here's why?
I like Josh Allen simply because, you know, he kind of like me, didn't, you know, went to a small school, people didn't necessarily think he would be able to make it as a pro, struggled early but found a way to overcome it, and now just picked up probably one of the biggest contracts ever for a quarterback in a city that truly loves him. And they're going to be incredibly good. He's super fun to watch. You know, that's the type of player. And then Aaron Rodgers is my favorite football player. Pretty cool to know him too. We play golf in the off season. But to watch him go out and do what he does, it looks so nonchalant. But I've seen him off the field, and I see how hard he works at it. Because the reason it looks like that on the field, because of all the work he does off it to make himself the best possible quarterback he can be. I hope he wins another championship. I knew that he had to come back to Green Bay this year because it was the only place that he truly had a team capable of helping him win a second Lombardi trophy.
Ryan, thank you so much for your candor and your honesty. Congratulations on you know, your road to redemption, now being a father, enjoying your life as an analyst, and a continued success. And I really like your perspective on rock bottom. I hope you never hit it. And I appreciate your inspiring words. We've had a lot of people text in. They really appreciate it. So thanks very much.
You bet. I'm glad I could be a part of it, guys. Thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit.